Welcome back. Joining me now is Joel Kotkin. He was last on March of 2017, where we discussed his recently released book, The Human City, Urbanism for the Rest of Us, and I'm hoping for a sequel, Urbanism for Festivus. We're going to talk about the housing crisis. Joel Kotkin writes a lot for newgeography.com. He's presidential fellow in urban futures, Chapman University, and he's internationally recognized authority on global, economic, political, and social trends. Welcome back to Radio Real Estate, Joel Kotkin.
My pleasure.
Great to talk to you again. I originally heard you at UCSB Economic Forecast many years ago, so I'm glad that you can find the time to talk to us. Your topic you want to talk about today is a housing crisis. Is there a housing crisis? What do you mean?
Well, I think there's a housing crisis in California in that it's an affordability crisis. California real estate prices are about twice the national average, and I can guarantee you California incomes are not twice what they are the rest of the country. So basically, people in California pay a very high percentage of their income in rent or in mortgage payments. And this is, of course, having an effect on recruitment of people to work here. It's having an effect on people being able to stay here. If you want to look at who's leaving California, it's basically middle-class people in their 30s and 40s who want to buy a house and can't afford to buy a house anyplace near where there's a job.
That's very true. I saw something recently about the economy is doing well, and a lot of businesses want to recruit and hire, and particularly up in Northern California, right, in the high-tech area, but they can't get people to move here because they can't afford to buy or live here.
Right, and that's why they've become so reliant on foreign, excuse me, on foreign workers, because they are, you know, they're coming here maybe for 2-3 years. They don't care if they live in an apartment with 3 or 4 people. It's when you start getting into your 30s and 40s that you really start having serious problems. But in the case of the Bay Area, and particularly San Francisco, the prices are so high that even young people being paid fairly high salaries really can't afford to be there. And that's why you see a lot of the tech companies beginning to expand more, let's say, in places like Austin or Raleigh or Orlando or Phoenix, because people can afford to live there much better. So long term, California has a real crisis. In the short term, those of us who own real estate are benefiting from this problem between supply and demand to a considerable extent. And so generally speaking, older people are more satisfied with what's going on than younger people.
Right, right. And you mentioned tech moving out of state and companies. I know a lot is made of, is it Amazon that's doing that big search?
Right.
Is there any chance of them coming to California?
Well, the only place left is Los Angeles, and I just can't see them making the move for lots of different reasons. You know, right now, Jeff Bezos, who runs Amazon, is in a fight with the City Council of Seattle because they've moved very far to the left, and they're imposing new taxes and generally speaking, I think he's going to want to go to a place with a friendlier business climate. And he knows even in Seattle right now, the prices are so high that they're having trouble recruiting. So it wouldn't make a real lot of sense to come to Southern California. I also don't think Southern California is going to be able to offer him the kind of incentives he'll want. I still think he's likely to go to the Washington, D.C. area, particularly Northern Virginia. There are some other places that might make sense, Atlanta, Dallas. Would make some sort of sense. But fundamentally, I very much doubt he'll come to Southern California.
My guest is Joel Kotkin. You can find him on newgeography.com. He's a regular contributor to Forbes.com, The Daily Beast, Real Clear Politics. You know, people always lament the housing crisis and the prices. It's interesting you just offhandedly mentioned that a lot of foreign workers come in for short term. And just staying 2-3 years, they don't mind doubling up on apartments. I didn't know about that. And that's not good for employing, trying to, you know, hire within the country. Technology moving out of state, prices are high. But why is it that the California economy is so strong, when it's labeled as the fifth largest economy in the world?
Why well, the fifth largest economy is largely a function of the weakness of the pound and the euro. I mean, it really is not necessarily that California is doing great. And if you look at GDP growth now, Texas is growing much faster than California. I mean, you know, elections have consequences. And the kind of policies that President Obama had were very good for a place which, you know, really relies pretty much on the stock market and real estate inflation. The policies were very good. Trump is, I think, politically trying to help in energies like manufacturing and energy, which are not so strong in California, but are very strong in other parts of the country. So if you look at what's been happening, California economy is sort of growing right now about the national average, maybe a little bit higher, and almost all that whatever advantage California has is almost entirely in the Bay Area. The rest is not doing all that great. So I mean, the economy is strong by some measurements, not so strong by others. And of course, if you start adding cost of living, then it looks pretty terrible because the poverty rate is the highest in the country. About a third of the welfare recipients in the country live in California. The leading places where people are paying the most in rent are in California. The places where there's the most crowding are in California. These are all things that the media tends to ignore. So I just think that you know, it's really quite not as rosy as people think. Remember, we've experienced in the last 5-6 years an enormous run-up in the value of a handful of very large companies in Silicon Valley, and that is basically what's driven California's GDP growth. You know, you have companies like Apple, Google, Facebook, which have just gone, you know, crazy in terms of their valuation, and that's really what's behind a lot of this sense that the California economy is on some amazing roll. I think it was in 2014, 2015, started to slow down a bit in 2016, and by the end of 2017, we were starting to see not a recession by any stretch of the imagination, but not a growth that was out of the ordinary, and again. By the end of last year, places like Texas and Florida were beginning to pass California, Texas, by quite a large margin.
My guest is Joel Kotkin. He's a presidential fellow in urban features at Chapman University, and you can find him at newgeography.com and sometimes Forbes.com. You mentioned, we're talking about housing prices and crisis. Long-term is not good. I loved learning what you just said about, you know, people love throwing out California's the fifth largest economy, and you explaining why it's not as good as it seems. Texas is growing at a faster rate than California in their GDP. And you mentioned long-term is not good. Is the advantage that California has with the Bay Area, Silicon Valley, is it eroding?
Well, I think at some point it certainly makes us much more vulnerable. And I think that, look, the Silicon Valley has had an incredible run of growth, both in terms of income and in terms of jobs. You know, very, very impressive. The rest of the state hasn't. In the earlier booms we have had in California, the growth was much more spread out among different sectors and different regions. This one has been very heavily concentrated, particularly in high-wage jobs, in the Bay Area. The rest of the state actually has not gained high wage jobs overall in the last decade. So what we have in Southern California is very high housing prices, but not the incomes, remotely the incomes to support those housing prices. So, you know, that's got to be in the long term a problem. What's keeping things afloat, particularly in certain places, like Orange County, parts of L.A., is the massive investment from predominantly China. In many of the developments in Orange County, the new developments, the vast majority of the people are Chinese nationals. Well, you know, they're not affected by the U.S. economy. They just want to get their money out of China.
And when you say the Chinese investment, you mean people coming in and buying real estate and businesses?
Unfortunately, it would be nicer if it was more investment in business. Houses and apartments, like, for instance, downtown Los Angeles, you have a couple of towers going up owned by a Chinese real estate company, and they're not even really marketing them in the rest of the country because nobody would buy them. What they'll do is they're selling them to Chinese. I have a friend of mine put it there, vertical safe deposit boxes. You know, if you're you're living in China, you say, okay, I own a, you know, a $800,000 apartment in downtown Los Angeles. All else fails, I can go there and I can use that to help get a green card. So, I mean, that's the kind of thing. You know, certainly places like Irvine are increasingly dominated by this kind of buyer. So that's a big factor. And there are other groups, too. Middle Easterners are coming in pretty big numbers. Indians are coming in pretty big numbers. So that's certainly a contributing factor, because although our real estate prices are very high, if you're coming from Dubai, or you're coming from Shanghai, or you're coming from Beijing, it doesn't seem that bad, or coming from Seoul, for that matter.
Yeah, that's interesting. I've heard that we're not that high. I know Santa Barbara, even sometimes as high as it is, jokingly referred to as the Nordstrom Rack when comparing it to some Bay Area or, you know, Beverly Hills.
Well, and the real, and then if you compare it to what you can buy in China, and remember, I've spent quite a bit of time in China, you can't have enough money to live as nicely as you can in many parts of Southern California, certainly Santa Barbara. I mean, there's just no way you live that well anywhere in China unless you are a, you know, multi-billionaire. So the attraction of California to overseas investors is very, very strong, and also to, you know, very wealthy Americans that are able to bring their money here. Look, there's no question that quality of life, weather, attractions, amenities, California's, you know, sort of at the top of the heap. And if you can afford it, it's great. If you can't, it's a bit of a problem.
Joel Kotkin is my guest. His last book was The Human City, Urbanism for the Rest of Us. And, you know, you mentioned that California it makes us a little more vulnerable. You mentioned Silicon Valley, and it's not geographical. It's not as if Silicon Valley is doing real well because we have good soil and a lot of rain and we're growing a lot of crops.
Right.
Those companies, are they going to get to the point where, you know, of course everyone wants to live in California, but, you know, could we see these companies relocating if it just gets so bad?
Well, I don't think they'll relocate. I think the headquarters functions generally stay. I mean, there are companies that move. The big oil companies, I think, have been moving. There are companies like Jacobs Engineering, which have moved. So there's certainly that does take place. But it's usually where they're expanding. Like when doing some work on Orange County and Southern California economy, we found that Apple had more employees than in Austin than it had in all of Southern California. So when they expand, they don't expand in California. You know, in the last boom that we had, we saw tech spreading to many, many parts of California, towards Sacramento, towards in Southern California. This time it's been very concentrated in San Francisco, San Mateo, and Santa Clara counties. The tech growth actually in L.A. and Orange has been kind of mediocre, particularly in L.A. So it's a very localized tech boom, and I think what you'll see, particularly if President Trump makes the H-1B visas more difficult, that you may start seeing companies who say, well, we can't get the foreign workers, so we're going to move, you know, to places where American workers can afford to live, like Raleigh or Austin or Phoenix or Dallas.
And do you think, what do you call them,
H-1B visas. These are the tech visas. You know, what the Indians call techno-coolies. you know, people who come and work at, you know, somewhat lower wages than they would get, and they're on a contract with a particular company, and they can't change jobs. Because obviously one of the things that is a problem for a lot of Silicon Valley companies is their best employees are constantly being recruited by rival firms.
What do you think, as an economist, of the H-1B visas, and if it is removed, is that going to help or hurt us?
Well, I'm not an economist, so I'm not going to do it from that point of view. I think the problem with the H-1B visas is it means that we have all these young people here in California and the rest of the country. We're telling them, go get the STEM degrees, you know, tech degrees. And then we're going and hiring somebody from India who isn't even a citizen and doesn't even have the intention of becoming a citizen. So I think that we're kind of, you know, betraying our own kids. And we know that there have been several cases now, both with Disney and Edison, where people who had been working in IT positions are replaced by these techno coolies, and then they have to train them before they lose their jobs. I mean, it's really outrageous in my mind, and we're really, what sort of message are we sending our kids? You know, well, you know, you go study and see the job taken by somebody from another country who will work for less than you and will also work go in and get a job if there's a better offer, because they, you know, when the H-1Bs come here, they sign a contract, they can't change companies, you know, so they're kind of like indentured servants.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing wrong with competition, and if someone wants to work less, you know, fine, but this is almost so artificial that it, and you're saying it doesn't really benefit our American youth. And so you've been on the program at least once before, maybe twice, and if I can't call you an economist, what can I call you?
I'm a writer. I write because I don't concentrate. Like, I find many economists, they know the economics, they don't know the demographics, they don't know the history. I try to look at the history. I try to look at the demographics. I look at the economics. I look at the sociology. And I think what happens is you get a lot of economists who, you know, like for instance, you'll get an economist saying, "Well, look at the numbers show this." Well, but what about the distribution of that wealth? And what about the trajectory? And who's, you know, what areas are benefiting, what areas aren't? What kind of workers are benefiting, which workers aren't? We know, for instance, in Silicon Valley, even during this boom, that Latino and African-American workers have actually done worse and that the middle class has gotten smaller. So, you know, you have to look at more than one measurement if you want to understand what's going on.
Big picture from writer Joel Kotkin. Again, his last book, The Human City, Urbanism for the Rest of Us. Would you consider a sequel, Urbanism for Festivus?
I think I've got another idea.
You got another idea. You're working on something else. So yeah. Overall, the topic, housing crisis, to repeat what you said earlier, you think the long term is not good. You mentioned older Californians owning homes. They're happy. What's your prediction for California with these high prices?
Well, I think the long term is that we're going to see, you know, first of all, rapid aging. We have a very low birth rate. So I think we're going to have an aging population. And I think that, you know, we're going to be a state that is increasingly bifurcated. In other words, very much divided between the rich and the poor. It's, you know, very unequal and not a lot of upward mobility for all but a small group of people. So the California dream, which, you know, brought a lot of us here in the first place, has kind of faded and has become a little bit more like a high-tech feudalism.
Right. I mean, I had mentioned to you, I grew up in Mount Vernon, New York, and you were born and raised where?
Well, I was born in Germany, but I was raised in New York.
Raised in New York City?
Yeah, Brooklyn and then Long Island.
Brooklyn and Long Island. Well, I still got a lot of family. My both sets of grandparents immigrated to Brooklyn in the early 1900s. The divided state, I guess the last question is, because I know you have a meeting, you got to go, do you think this will get any traction with, you know, it comes up trying to divide the state and make two states, or even they're trying to go three states? Is that ever going to get off the ground?
Well, I don't know if it's ever going to get off the ground, but I know as somebody who lives in Orange County, I would be delighted to get rid of the Bay Area, you know, just because, you know, they are the driving force and complete control of the state. I mean, Southern California is just pathetic politically. I mean, almost every major office has a person, San Francisco or maybe Oakland account for almost the entire state state leadership, and the state's just completely dominated by, you know, by the Bay Area. So, you know, Southern California, which was once a political powerhouse, is now become, you know, essentially neutered.
Right. Maybe maybe the new state, you should call it bifurcate instead of bifurcate.
Mm-hmm.
My guest has been Joel Kotkin. Look for a new book. His most recent book that we talked about last year was the housing, I keep losing it on this sheet, The Human City, Urbanism for the Rest of Us. Joel Kotkin, you can also find him at newgeography.com, forbes.com, taking the macro view, writing not just about economics, but demographics, political, and social trends. I so appreciate you making some time to join us, and I hope we can talk to you again.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Joel Kotkin. Okay. Mark Schneiman's Radio Real Estate, radiorealestate.com. And I'm glad I was able to squeeze another 5 minutes because he was supposed to leave at a quarter till the hour. And I just learned he was from back east. I'm from back east. And I just learned that Rod Serling actually was born and raised, or I don't know if he was born, but he was raised in Binghamton, New York. Upstate New York. I went to school at Oneonta, New York, before transferring to UCSB, and Binghamton's right in the middle of the state. What did I say his name was? I texted you. Rod Serling originally was
Rodman.
No relation to Dennis Rodman. We'll take a quick break, come back with the weekly multiple listing sales update.